Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
Now, it's no secret that James is really passionate about working with other holistic providers, and he's also passionate about gut health. So today's episode is really exciting. We're welcoming Dr. Matt Worthington, who is not only a clinical psychologist, but he also specialises in trauma, which makes him the perfect guest to talk about the relationship between trauma and gut-brain health.
Yeah, welcome, Dr. Matt. I know that, we've worked together with quite a few patients and, appreciate the referrals. And certainly it's a really cool space to work in. So I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today so we can, get stuck into some of the things that we work together on with our patients.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Matt, can we get you to kick off and tell us a little bit about what it is that you actually do and the types of patients you work with?
Okay. So I'm a clinical psychologist, so basically work within that space of mental health issues, helping people to mostly recover from trauma, really. That's my specialty. Would you like me to give you some background as to how I fell into that?
Yeah, that would be great. And also, like, what exactly is, to you, what's your definition of trauma?
Okay. So trauma is an old Sanskrit word. It actually means wound. It can, in more contemporary times, we could say it could mean wound or change. So an adaption in the body, if you like. Sometimes the changes are good, as in beneficial for survival purposes. If you think about it, our body hasn't changed much since primitive times. So these changes could be beneficial, like in primitive times, if you had an incident, say, with a predator, and because of that incident you became more anxious, that's going to increase your likelihood of survival. So it would have been a benefit back then. However, we live in Townsville in 2024, and that adaption might not be as beneficial as it was previously.
Right. And so you take a real holistic approach to your work. Can you explain that to us a little bit about how you prefer to work?
Yeah, very much so. So the reason why I take a holistic approach is because the body is a system, a whole compendium of systems, really. And when we have a trauma, so a wound, a change in the body, if you like, following or during an event, the change can affect many of the processes within the body. One of the main ones is gut health, really, and the microbiome within the gut. And the microbiome, one of the roles it has is to help regulate the person, And for example, the little microbes in the gut make a lot of our neurotransmitters, and they can be affected by the impact of a traumatic event.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is it fair to say that most people would not make that connection of gut health with brain and mental health issues and things like that? So is it something that when you're taking that holistic approach with your patients and they've come to you to talk through their issues, they might be having some mental health challenges and needing a little bit of help navigating things in life, and you suggest to them, hey, we need to look at your gut health, what's the reaction from patients?
50-50. Some people are open to it and other people are a bit stunned because if you think about it, we can't look inside of our body, can we? We look outwards. Mm. We can't look inside, so we can't see, the changes which have occurred within our body. So it can be a bit, alien to some people, but if you think about it, our mind is a product, a manifestation of our physiology, so the state of our physiology is reflected in the experiences we have within our mental space. An example would be drinking alcohol. You know, you drink alcohol, you change your biochemistry, and that change is going to be reflected within your thought, as your thoughts and feelings, you know. So basically, and that's another example would be taking antidepressants, so medicine. So that changes your biochemistry, and that change is reflected within your mind.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And because, you know, you're obviously very passionate about patient care and that holistic approach, so you have, I guess, over time collected a range of other health professionals who, you know, you share that ethos of the holistic work for patient care. And so sometimes you're referring patients to James at Hello Health. Can you tell us why that's an important step for the patient care for you?
Yeah. So my golden rule is there's always a reason for a behavior, really, is, or how you're feeling. And we are basically just biochemistry. So, you know, the first thing I suggest to the person is to go along and see a nutritionist like James, an excellent nutritionist, and maybe even, you know, ask him about getting some blood work, or his doctors about getting some blood work, because this is the foundation, really, of our well-being. Having a look at it's a bit like when you have a car, it's like getting in there, looking at the oil and making sure everything's okay, and then build from there, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
The biochemistry is the foundation.
And so, James, tell us from your point of view, you know, your opinion on how the gut health is connected with mental health and the brain.
Yeah, so certainly I think, I guess more colloquially now, people are referring to the gut as the second brain, which makes complete sense. And it's, I guess, to add on to what Matt's saying, I mean, many of our neurotransmitters are made in the gut by our bacteria. So again, if our gut is not right, we can't really expect our neurochemistry to be right. And I think the way, I guess, it integrates, so, you know, in terms of things like nutritional, you know, psychiatry, if we've got deficiencies, you know, in our gut microbiome, it's going to be a handbrake to getting better. So you can do talk therapy and you can do those sort of things around trauma, but if you've got a bit of a handbrake in terms of, you know, like a micronutrient deficiency, or your gut's not right, you know, inflammation in your gut will signal to your brain, which sort of keeps that that trauma path well ridden. And so I guess what we're really doing is working with Matt and doing a nice holistic look. So, you know, if they've got problems with their gut, we're going to absolutely want to fix that, because we know that that's has massive implications on how they get better. You know, again, like Matt said, we'll do blood tests and we'll say, oh, look, you're low in vitamin D. And again, we speak about this every episode, but, you know, if your vitamin D is low, you will feel sad and you will feel more depressed, and it does affect your ability to make serotonin. So that's really how we approach it. And a lot of it from a trauma point of view for me is really about reducing inflammation in the body, because if there's inflammation in the body, those neurotransmitters won't work the way that you'd like them to. So again, if we've got the biochemistry right, and, you know, you're talking to a psychologist and you're sort of doing talk therapy or working through trauma or whatever it is, you'll get much better results from any of that, rather than sort of being held back by some imbalances in your body.
Yeah. And so, Matt, what sort of changes do you start to see in the patient once the gut health starts being treated? How does that then affect the effectiveness of the therapy work that you're doing with them?
Improved emotional regulation. That's the biggest one. Because as James said, a lot of the microbes in our gut, they help to regulate our other processes, including, you know, our emotional states. For example, serotonin is 90% of our serotonin is actually made in the gut. Have you heard of serotonin? The happy chemical?
Yep.
Well, 90% of that's made in the gut and by little bacteria, right? Mm. And stress and poor diet and toxins, environmental toxins, and what can affect those microbes that help to make the serotonin. And so if sort of trying to get our diet right to cultivate those microbes that make the happy chemicals is fundamental, and we see that manifesting as better emotional regulation, mental clarity, and just basically feeling more content, you know, just having a sense of a greater sense of balance as well.
So it's almost like your brain is being hijacked by all these other kind of emotions, and that makes it very hard for you to put into practice some of the advice that you're perhaps giving patients, whereas with these changes, they're able to be in a bit more control of those conscious decisions they're making.
That's a really good word that you used, hijacked. Because
it's one of James's words.
Have we spoken about the amygdala hijack?
No.
Okay.
So basically, the amygdala hijack is a process which involves two little bits in your brain called the amygdala. The amygdalas, and they're like little walnuts.
Yeah.
Like little nuts. And basically what they do is they're looking for threat all the time. And once they sense threats, like, you know, through the sensory apparatus, either hearing, seeing, smelling, whatever, once they sense a threat, what they'll do is they will cut the blood supply to your frontal cortex so you can't think, right? So imagine in primitive times, if you're being chased by a predator, right, the amygdala is activated, they cut the blood supply to your frontal cortex so you can't think and you just react. So you can't respond. You just react,
yeah.
and that's for survival purposes. And so people who have better emotional regulation are less susceptible to that, whereas people who have maybe, you know, sort of poor gut health and what have you, they may be more susceptible to these amygdala hijacks. In other words, an amygdala hijack is a fight and flight response. It's otherwise known as stress. You know, so basically people with better gut health are probably less likely to go into the amygdala hijack. In other words, be less stressed generally.
Yeah, and I can absolutely relate to that. And James will remember a point in time when I was nutritionally depleted and I just kept repeating the same patterns, same catastrophic patterns over and over. Yeah. And it was once we really got my body sorted, you know, nutritionally and gut health, that I was then able to be in a bit better control, and all the things that, you know, I was learning through psychology appointments and things like that, things that I had previously wanted to do, but I was able to then put them into practice better. Yeah. And it was such a remarkable difference, wasn't it, James? How it just turned my life around.
Feeling more balanced, right?
Yeah.
So the amygdala hijack is really important. And then an extension of that is the, from that fight and flight response, that triggers the immune system. Right. Possibly because, and this is just my opinion, possibly because in primitive times, one of the main reasons for being stressed, in other words, going into the amygdala hijack, the fight and flight response, would be being attacked by a predator. So if you're going to be attacked by a predator, it'd be really good if your immune system was activating preemptively prepared for a possible bite from a predator. And then to take care of the invading microbes from that bite, if you like. So that's pretty cool. And we call that process inflammation, which is really interesting, actually, inflammation, because it's a Latin word. It means inside flame process or heat process. And what's really interesting is when the fight and flight response is activated, the immune system, and correct me if I'm wrong here, James, because he's the expert here. The immune system releases something that's called pyrogens. Make fire, right? And these basically talk to the brain and tell the brain to warm the body up, right? Because sometimes the immune system can work better if the body's warm, right? And it's really interesting. So inside flame process, warming up, right? And then you'll see various symptoms of this as well. Yeah. So like, for example, fever perhaps sometimes, or redness, or just feeling sick. But it's basically the inflammatory process the immune system is activating. Now, that's great if you have an infection from a bite or whatever. But the problem is it's the link between the fight and flight response, which is like the fire alarm going off, and then it triggers the immune system to activate. And they're like the fire trucks going out, right? And that's great if you have an infection. However, it's when you don't have an infection but you're stressed, that's the fire alarm, and the fire trucks still go out and they start to destroy things. There's no invading microbes, so it's almost like they get confused and they start to destroy friendly cells. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And again, you're very similar to James, using these great analogies that the layperson can understand. We've all got visions of fire trucks going out now, but it's so relatable. James, do you want to weigh in about the immune system here?
Yeah, so I guess the simple analogy is if you've got an infection and yeah, Matt's right. Your body will heat up as part of that process, which, you know, the obvious thing is fever in people if they've got like a cold or a flu. And the reason the body does that is because the same way that you would, you know, boil water to, you know, clean it from bugs and things like that, the body will try and heat up to make a less ideal environment for those bacteria. But that whole inflammatory pathway is what I think exacerbates trauma. So if you've got that continual inflammation, your body keeps holding on to that. So, you know, essentially with that continual inflammation, the body's thinking about that trauma and it's holding it and it's keeping it in rather than just sort of like moving on, which is why some things, you know, that might be traumatic for some people, you know, they can really hold on to them and sort of dwell and overthink, you know, all the time. Whereas other people might have something, you know, the same sort of trauma happen to them and it not make it as big of an impact. So yeah, that inflammation is a really key part of us addressing. And which is why, you know, even things like CBD oil, and I'm talking about CBD in terms of like the cannabis oil extract without THC. So you won't get like a high, but the CBD oil activates or it reduces inflammation in the amygdala, like Matt was talking about. So that part of the brain which will regulate anxiety. So again, it just comes back to addressing inflammation and potential sources of inflammation. And the reason we focus on the gut is because, yes, our microbes are making things like serotonin, but because the gut's two football fields worth of surface area, it's a massive, you know, place for, you know, inflammation to occur and affect the whole body. And again, if we go back to like the whole leaky gut, leaky brain. So again, it's all about reducing inflammation where we can. And that's why there's good evidence for, you know, fish oil, vitamin D, some of the other good oils that, you know, we talk about like sea buckthorn. And again, we talk about clean diet because if you're feeling depressed and anxious and you're generally not likely to be that motivated to look after yourself. So you're generally going to eat, you know, not so well. You might be, you know, drinking more, and all that does is just feed that inflammation. So a lot of what we try and do is educate patients around that. And if we can get them to eat better, take care of themselves better, the rest will flow.
Yeah.
Can I just ask James a question? James, what are your thoughts on inflammation generally as being the fundamental cause of disorder? So that, you know, we have genetic disorders and we have age-related and infectious, and then we have just chronic inflammation from toxins and chronic stress. Do you think inflammation is the main underlying destructive force within the body? Or?
Yeah, I think, well, there's an idea that aging is inflammation. And so as you age, you know, when you look at someone, you say, oh, look, they look like they've lived a hard life. You know, they might look older, yeah. And that's all inflammation, right? So rather than aging, be a natural process, it's exacerbated by inflammation. And again, I've got a saying that inflammation is the root of all evil. So yes, I do. Yeah. I do agree. Yeah. Unfortunately, I say there's a few things that are the root of all evil.
Yeah.
So I have a few roots of all evil, but definitely inflammation is a massive problem, No matter what you're talking about. Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about mental health in this particular topic, but again, if I was treating someone for an autoimmune condition, which is all dysregulation of inflammation, we'd be doing the same things. And, you know, same thing is if someone came to see me and they had chronic back pain, for example, again, I wouldn't be, you know, looking at, there's certain things I'd be looking at. And a lot of them, again, would be like getting the gut right, getting the diet right. And lo and behold, people's backs feel better. So they might have an injury, and that injury is kind of like that little flag that the body will sort of attack or respond to. But if we can stop the cause of that inflammation, then they will get improved symptoms.
Would you say there's a difference between acute healthy inflammation and chronic destructive? What's the difference?
Yeah, so obviously we have inflammation because it's useful to us. So it's a little flag that the body goes, great, we've got a problem here, we need to go and fix it. But so acute inflammation, certainly useful and helpful. But yeah, when it's chronic, that's where we have problems. And it's no surprise to see that, you know, again, people that don't look after themselves in terms of their general well-being are more likely to suffer things like traumas and have mental health conditions. So yeah, and you know, the list goes on. You're more likely to have, you know, back problems, you're more likely to have hormone imbalance, you're more likely to you know, just suffer just about anything, really.
And PTSD is strongly associated with inflammation. Trauma is strongly associated with inflammation, chronic inflammation, which is really important. So That's another strong signal to look at the diet as well, as James is saying, because this a lot of the symptoms of PTSD could be, I'm not saying they are, but could be strongly linked to chronic inflammation.
So, Matt, James alluded to before that two people can experience the same situation but react very differently in their trauma response.
Yeah.
Do you think that could be part of the reason, or is it just that we're all different of how we respond to things and how that manifests in our life?
I think that's a really good point. So let's say, for example, let's say that the story I usually tell is you've got two children, you know, and they're both watching a spider crawl up the wall. And one is absolutely fascinated by the spider, and maybe that's a defining experience, and that child goes on to be a biologist, say, you know. And the other child is absolutely terrified, right? So that sort of shows that trauma is not the event, it's the response of the body to an event. We might use different words like the impact or the change, but it's basically the bodily, the physical response to the event, the change, the wound, because they're the wound.
Mm.
And what determines whether, you know, a child reacts in a positive or a negative way? Well, I suppose there's any number of factors, really. Genetic, and maybe within that, I'm not sure, but maybe there's a genetic component to resilience. So resilience, you know, can help us to, you know, emotional regulate in tough situations, and also nature and nurture, so the way we've been nurtured as well. So if a child is resilient and that is sort of like cultivated, if you like, by a nurturing environment, a harmonious environment, that'd be really important. So nature and nurture play a big part in the physical response to events, traumatic events.
And my understanding is that sometimes when patients come to you, they're having a bit of a tough time and they're just needing to talk through some things. Often they may not necessarily be aware of some of the trauma that they're holding within their body. Is that correct? And
Absolutely.
What are some of the symptoms that are manifesting through that?
Absolutely. Well, just to say this, that we're all traumatized because trauma means change or wound. And so our ancestors would have been traumatized. And I mean, in other words, you know, the body would have changed in some way internally. And that change, for example, cortisol gets elevated when we're stressed, right? It's one of the stress hormones. That can actually sit on genes within the DNA. So genes are like sections of DNA, and human beings have about 26,000 genes, right? Thereabouts, and the cortisol molecules can sit on the genes, on these little sections of DNA, and switch them on and off. And so, you know, sometimes it's a bit of a luck of the draw, really. So sometimes, you know, it can be this can result in a positive benefit for you know, for survival reasons, like the person might become more anxious, or it can be what's called maladaptive, where perhaps, you know, it's not so good for the individual. And our genes can switch on and off throughout the day, by the way. And we can inherit these changes from our, you know, previous generations. For example, epigenetics. So I think it was about 300 years ago in the Netherlands, in Europe, there was a famine. Now, I could be wrong on the time here, but there was a famine. And basically the next generation, so that would have caused a lot of stress, right? The next generation were overweight. So there's been some sort of adaptation there, which has happened. And the generation after that, overweight. And then it settled down again as the food supply became more available. So we can inherit these changes for survival reasons. Nature's wonderful, really, you know, to help us perpetuate the species, right? And so we can inherit, and also we can, you know, we can be traumatized, you know, so to go towards your question again, like being in the womb, if something unexpected happens and mom gets stressed, the cortisol is pumped directly into the baby's brain. Why? Probably for adaption purposes. You know, it's all about survival. We are survival machines. Being born is traumatizing. You know, so much so the baby... Do you know what happens when the baby's born? It's like it has a natural painkiller. So the baby doesn't experience too much trauma. Our body has a natural painkiller when we're being born.
Wow.
So we don't actually experience too much pain. I don't know if they still do this, but this is also traumatizing. Well, I'm not sure they still do this now when the doctor holds the baby up and gives them a slap.
They certainly didn't do it with mine. I don't think they did it with yours, James.
But that would have been incredibly traumatizing.
Yeah. Not a great welcome to the world, really,
nice,
is it?
Environment, and then boom, you know. So, and it doesn't, you know what, it doesn't take much to affect a trauma in somebody. I mean, there's a famous experiment called the still face experiment. So would you like me to tell you about this?
Yeah. Okay. Give us a quick rundown on it. That'd be great.
The still face experiment was a controversial experiment. I think it was conducted in the 70s by a guy called Professor Tronick. So basically what he did was he got a really amazing mum to bring her baby into the psychology lab in the university. And she brought I think the baby is 1 year old. And mum and baby were cuddling and all happy and playing and da-da-da-da-da. And then Professor Tronick instructed the mum to turn away from the baby and then turn back with completely straight face, right? And the baby registered this straight away. And within 2 minutes, the baby was incredibly distressed. And all the mum was doing was just staring at the baby with a still face with no facial expression. And then after the 2 minutes, the mum started cuddling the baby and everything was fine, right? The baby became distressed, tried to get mum to interact, and then was turning away to try and get out of the high chair to move away. And that's because, and that's just a still face, right? And that's because as primitive human beings, before language, we needed to communicate to each other in the tribe that we had each other's back by smiling or, you know, just some sort of pleasant expression on our face. And that would indicate, I've got your back and you're going to be okay. And we go backwards and forwards doing that. And obviously, if someone was grimacing, so like showing their teeth, that would show anger and show you that I haven't got your back and I might even attack you. Still face, I don't know what you're going to do. So I'm going to, you know, go to the worst case scenario and I'm going to try and get out of here. Right. So that's all it took. That's all it took. So the fight and flight system went on. The immune system would have activated as per. And then if this fight and flight system, when mom after the 2 minutes calmed the baby down and everything was good, the fight and flight system has switched off again. There was that what's called the corrective experience. So that likely wouldn't have led to a trauma, right? The issue is that often that doesn't happen. Often the fight and flight system stays on, right? And there's no reparation, there's no switching it off, there's no corrective experience. The immune system may stay activated, and the destruction begins. You know, if the child is in a disharmonious, dysfunctional environment.
Yeah,
and that's all it takes.
Fascinating, isn't it? And I think there's probably lots of pennies dropping for audience members in terms of different experiences they've had in their life, mm-hmm. which has potentially contributed to some trauma that may still be unresolved.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Matt, just to sort of wrap up, you know, like I think we really understand a lot more now about some of, you know, the trauma occurrences and how people might be dealing with unresolved trauma. You know, certainly I know that between you and James, you're seeing some great responses to patients by combining that psychology with the good gut health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I would say James provides the fundamentals. It's like I said before, it's like the oil in the car. It's absolutely essential to get that right. And then we can start with, you know, it's a lot easier to do the other stuff, the psychological therapy, if you've got the underlying fundamentals sorted, as in your nutrition, gut health sorted. It's so much easier. And I've seen some amazing results from with people who have actually followed that route and gone down the nutritional path as the most important fundamental. Get that sorted out first, and then the rest is a lot easier, as James said before. He said like the handbrake, you know, yeah, you're taking the handbrake off so you can progress faster.
Amazing. And I know there's another topic that you're incredibly passionate about. You're an advanced Wim Hof instructor. Can you tell us very quickly, what is Wim Hof and how does that benefit people?
Okay. I love the way when you said, what is Wim Hof? Because that's what I said when I first heard about Wim Hof. What is Wim Hof? And I was having a conversation with someone about 5 years ago at the table, and this guy was going on about Wim Hof. And I said, what is Wim Hof? And he said, no, not what is Wim Hof, who is Wim Hof? And I was like, oh, wow. And this guy proceeded to tell me the story about this Dutch guy, Wim Hof, right, who basically about 40 years ago, right, maybe 50, who, about 50 years ago, he was living in abject poverty as a little child, and very poor, very good parents, though, very nurturing parents in the Netherlands, right? And his mom taught him yoga as a 10-year-old. His dad would encourage him to be fit and cycle and what have you. And he began to get really into yoga and spirituality throughout his early teens. And then he began to meditate, and he followed a particular type of meditation called Jidumo meditation, which is practiced by monks, I think, in the Tibetan area and at high altitudes, where they would sit at high altitudes with just a pair of shorts on and then be draped in ice-cold, soaking wet blankets at very high altitudes. And they'd meditate, and they'd visualize their body getting warmer, and they would actually dry out the blankets, right? So mind over matter, right? So he became very interested in this stuff, and they also practiced, these monks practiced a particular type of breath work as well. So he began to practice the breath work, and he began to practice cold water exposure. It coming from the adversity, the poverty that he'd come from, so obviously that can, you know, lead to depression and what have you, because it's very traumatic. However, practicing his meditation, practicing his yoga, and especially practicing the cold water exposure really helped him to feel much better, and he improved his resilience. And then what he did was, he had several other traumas happen in his life, but what helped him was his meditation, his yoga, and especially cold water exposure. He'd run and jump into lakes in Amsterdam in the middle of winter. He became known as the Iceman. And I know, right? And then he found it so beneficial for developing physical and psychological resilience. And he didn't know at the time about inflammation, but he began to work with doctors who became interested in him. But how he got them interested was because he actually climbed Everest. He was so resilient. He climbed Everest in just a pair of shorts and boots.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's videos of him on YouTube doing this. And that because of his resilience, right, physical and psychological. And the doctors took an interest in him. And there's now, and he also developed a method called the Wim Hof method, which consists of a certain type of breath work, meditation, yoga, and cold water exposure, ice baths, basically. And it is absolutely phenomenal. And what happens when you're doing the breath work and you're doing the ice bath, cold water exposure, is you get this adrenaline spike. So you get this adrenaline spike. And that's really important. And the way I'd compare it is to like an anaphylactic shock with an EpiPen. So what happens when you put an EpiPen, which is epinephrine, which is like adrenaline in your body, the immune response, which is anaphylactic shock, goes down, right? So we've talked about chronic inflammation being an issue. It's strongly related to depression, PTSD, and lots of other mental health issues, the underlying chronic inflammation. So when you do Wim Hof breath work and cold water exposure, you get this adrenaline spike. And guess what that does? It reduces the inflammation. It's a bit like an EpiPen for anaphylactic shock. The inflammation goes down significantly. So if you practice the Wim Hof method consistently, the medical research shows that there are significant decreases in inflammation, pain, tends to be relieved, or the intensity of pain tends to be relieved, mental clarity, more energy. Why is that? Well, because chronic inflammation basically destroys healthy cells. And possibly, and again, James knows more about this than I do, but every cell in your body, apart from your red blood cells, has mitochondria. These mitochondria are little batteries that make your energy, otherwise known as ATP, in your body. And if your immune system is destroying healthy cells and also destroying, so basically they're destroying the mitochondria that make your energy, plus they might be destroying the processes that help to, you know, take that energy and put it into places where it's required, like, you know, for mental clarity and what have you. Well, if the immune system's destroying those processes, then you're going to feel tired and brain fog and da 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 da. But when the immune system is calmed down, you get something called genesis. And genesis is basically the new cells being generated. And every new cell, apart from red blood cells, has little mitochondria batteries, so you feel more energized.
Fascinating. And James, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think, again, cold water therapy is becoming very, very popular. So, I can only imagine when combined, you know, with meditation and yoga, it's really quite transformational. And, you know, ironically, cold water therapy, I'm pretty sure, activates heat shock protein. So, Matt's right. It's associated with longevity, obviously reduction of inflammation. So it's all very, very positive. And, something that some of us probably feel like doing in tropical North Queensland every now and again.
Yeah, I think absolutely points to the benefits of taking, you know, that holistic approach to health. Well, Dr. Matt Worthington, clinical psychologist, it's been absolutely fantastic having you here. I think it's great the way such great patient care and finding other health professionals to refer patients to. If anyone would like to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
You can find me at Path Psychology, that's a bulk billing practice, and we have face-to-face sessions there as well as online and phone, and so they just need a mental health plan,
yep.
It's a GP mental health plan. That's in Charters Towers Road in Misterton in Townsville, and also on a Friday I'm at NeuroHealth Solutions, which is just off Burke Street in Townsville.
Amazing. Well, Townsville, North Queensland is very lucky to have someone so passionate in that space, helping them with their mental health journey. I'm sure hopefully there's other practitioners around that might be inspired by what you've talked about as well and look at ways that they can be more holistic. But at least you are available for online appointments for anyone listening who isn't in this region. James and Matt, been great chatting with you. James, any last nuggets of advice you'd like to give any of our listeners about today's topic?
Yeah, I think it's, again, the things we go back to, you know, reach out if, you know, people are struggling with certain things, understand the relationships between, you know, the way you take care of yourself and the impacts that that can have on your mental health. So don't treat your brain as in it's in a box. So yeah, you know, look at, you know, things like gut health, you know, other inflammatory things, whether it be, you know, like what you're eating, nutrient deficiencies, things like that. Again, look at that whole holistic approach, and yeah, we're more than happy to help anyone that has any questions.
Great advice. Thanks, James. Thanks, Matt. We will see you all in our next episode.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.